this morning to welcome to our program Roger Higgins. Roger immigrated to America from England as a child and became a lawyer. He is the author of the historical novel Billy Gogan, Gone Per Soldier. He will be talking with us, and let's welcome him, and delighted to have him with us. And it's all about immigrant struggles and the Irish influx of the 19th century. What was it like? Good morning. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be able to join you. And I'm here in southern Spain, and I have my grandchild just over there. Maybe you can hear him.
Yes.
But life can't get much better than this.
Now, so you're calling us from southern Spain this morning.
Yep, just outside of Granada.
Well, it's like you're right next door, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You're coming in loud and clear.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Isn't it something? Modern technology, I love it.
Roger, hi, Paul Pacelli here. Roger, talk about what made you write this book and your reason for doing so.
So this book is the second in a series. It is the sequel to my first novel, which came out a couple of years ago, called Billy Gogan American. And these are going to be eventually part of a four-book series that chronicles a young man, Billy Gogan, and his experiences and his struggles as he comes over, emigrates from Ireland just before the potato famine. Ireland's in a bad place. The British just put their foot down. There will be no Irish independence. His father died in prison as a result of this, and he's forced to flee.
Wow.
So the first book is his experiences in New York, and the second book finds him as a private in the Army, standing guard duty on a sand dune on St. Joseph's Island, Isla de San Jose, one of the barrier islands in South Texas. And I, in my Navy days many decades ago, have steamed by there. Mm. It's still there, that sand dune, and it's a beautiful island, not quite as beautiful as it was 175 years ago, but still, you know, quite magnificent. And this was the landing spot for the American Army as it was shipped down from New Orleans. They would take surf boats, essentially big rowboats, and they had to row everything ashore, their horses, their baggage, their ammunition, their cannon. And they would land them on this island, haul them up over the dune, down to the other side, where they could put them on a little flat steamer, because the Aransas Bay is so shallow, was before it was dredged. It's now a major sea. There's now a major sea channel there, but it was so shallow that you couldn't bring ships in there. Mm. And so the American Army to get down to Corpus Christi, and if you drive on the there's a seaside boulevard. There's a seaside boulevard there today, and that's where the American Army camped over the winter of from the summer of 1845 until March of 1846. They were there for 7 months and 15 days and some odd hours, as somebody wrote. And then they marched south and eventually went to war with Mexico.
Mm.
First over Texas, and then over the rest of the Southwest United States. And this is a tiny army, 3,000 men. The U.S. Army had not fought in a major battle at that point in 30 years, since the Battle of New Orleans with Andrew Jackson,
wow.
You know, the Calhoun's president. It was just, I heard that on the news while I was on hold.
Yeah.
You know, so this is the first time the American Army had fought against a major, you know, sort of European-style opponent in 30 years. There was quite a bit of anxiety over how well they would do. They were all regulars. There were no volunteers at the beginning. The volunteers didn't come down south till later. And so there were, you know, six regiments of infantry, which was, by the way, more than half of the entire army.
Mm-hmm.
One regiment of cavalry, and they managed to lose an two entire squadrons of it before the war even really started. The Mexicans caught them unawares. And they were cut off, threatened to be cut off by the Mexican army, and that's how the war started.
Roger, you know what? In the interest of time here, I just want to step in here. I know that part of the reason we're having you on here is to ask you, because you've written about this and you've studied this, you know, we're in this immigration debate right now, and whether or not, you know, we should have a wall or anything. And there's always parallels I hear. People bring it, well, you know, my relatives or my parents were Irish, and we just let them come in here, and we didn't have any sort of overly regulatory system. We should invite everybody. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a complicated topic. Mm-hmm. The one thing I will say about today's situation is we're talking about the wrong thing. Just one little data point, which is the biggest source of undocumented immigrants is visitors who overstay their visas.
Yep.
And most of them are Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
So
Canadians.
Canadians, okay? Followed by the Irish and the English.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let everybody sort of stew on that. But to go back to the 1840s, so you had two major groups of immigrants in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Germans, and then there was this larger and growing ever larger by the month group of Irish. To put it into perspective about how many Irish emigrated in the mid-19th century, Ireland started the century with about 6.5 million people.
Yeah.
By the end of the century, there were 2.5 million. They emigrated or they died.
Was that because of the potato famine?
Part of it. I mean, it was partly, yeah. It wasn't even a famine. They call it the Great Hunger.
Yeah.
It was a massive crop failure.
Yeah, yeah.
It was stomach turning. And I say that as somebody who was born in England.
Mm-hmm.
I have studied the history. It was stomach-turning. And so the specter of the Great Hunger, and Gorta Mór is what they say, call it in Irish.
Yeah.
And Gorta Mór is hanging over the Irish soldiers in the American army. So, I mean, that's one of the fascinating bits about it. Of all the regulars, maybe half, maybe a little bit more, were immigrants. You had them from every country in Western Europe, France, Germany, England, Ireland, and not a few of them were deserters from the British Army up in Canada. And there's this fellow named Riley, who will, I mean, this is a real historic character, John Riley, will play a fairly major role in the second and third books in Gone for Soldier. You hear about him. And in the sequel, which I am getting ready now, finishing up now, he plays a major role because he was the commander of what they call the Irish Battalion that fought for the Mexicans. So there were a lot of deserters.
Have you, you know what, we're running short on time here. Have you optioned any of these for a TV or a movie deal?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'd be happy to talk to somebody who wants to talk to me about it. How's that?
where are your books available, Roger? We appreciate you coming on. Yep.
Books are available on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And, yeah, sorry we didn't say. There are very strong parallels here. No question.
Interesting, interesting.
Parallels aren't 100%, but they're there.
All right.
Well, very, very, very interesting. And we thank you so much. And I'll tell you, we get you back here at a later date and do some other things that we didn't have a chance to do this morning. But it was just terrific for you to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger.
Great.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
19 minutes after the hour.
Yep.